flew from my hair. I lean against him with my arms wrapped around his waist and my breasts pressed against his chest, and wonder again what Michael would think if he could see me now. Which is when the guilt hits me, cold and solid as a brick dropped onto my head. A nasty little voice inside my mind starts hissing insults. Your husband hasn't been dead a full month yet, and you've already had sex with another man. How could you? Aiden says softly.
Your body gets really tense when you start to freak out.
I exhale and remain silent. There aren't any words for what I'm feeling anyway. He reaches behind me to turn off the faucet. Then he palms my head and presses it to his chest. His other arm, he wraps around me. We stand naked and dripping like that for a while, embracing in silence, until he says,
We can do anything or nothing. I don't expect you to have any answers right now.
How does he always know what I'm thinking? Emotion threatens to swell my throat closed, but I speak around it. What do you want to do? He gives me a squeeze and pronounces,
This, as much as possible.
My laugh is soft. That can be arranged. Stroking my wet hair, he presses a kiss to the top of my head.
You sure? I know your situation is complicated. I don't want to make it worse.
Without thinking, I say, So far, you're the only thing that's made it better. I cringe when I hear how it sounds. How raw and vulnerable. How needy. But if Aiden thinks it's off-putting, he doesn't show it. He simply kisses my head again and murmurs,
Good.
I raise my head and look at him. He gazes down at me with a faint smile, his eyes warm. My voice wavering, I say, Can I be honest with you?
That's all I ever want you to be.
Okay. Well, I inhale a breath, then let it go in a gust. This has been amazing. I mean, really amazing. Like, incredible. I don't have any experience with this kind of thing because I was married for a long time and pretty much always in a long-term relationship before that. When I don't continue, he says,
Are you asking me something in particular, or are you just thinking out loud?
I'm not sure. I'm having all kinds of feelings about this.
Me too. You think this happens to me every day?
I pull away and look him up and down, all that perfect, rugged masculinity. Yes. He pulls me back against him and cups my hand in his jaw.
No, it doesn't.
He stares at me with such unwavering intensity. I believe him. Nobody can lie that well this close. I say, Thank God. And both of us are surprised by how forcefully it comes out. Aiden starts to laugh. I blush from my neck to my forehead. He pulls me in and holds me tightly, nuzzling my ear.
Sweet bunny.
He whispers, still chuckling.
I think you like me.
Flaming with embarrassment, I say, No, I just need my roof fixed, and I thought I'd shag your brains out to see if I could get a discount. Pulling away, he pretends to be shocked.
I already gave you a discount.
I grin up at him. Oh, yeah, I forgot. 2,000 all in, right? He glowers, but he's only playing.
Wrong. 10,000.
Wait, you said 5. His glower cracks. He starts to laugh again. I smack him lightly on the chest. Jerk.
Guilty. What do you want for breakfast?
Don't tell me you cook, too.
Only the best scrambled eggs you'll ever eat.
Smiling, I say, I guess that's what I'll have then. He lowers his head and softly kisses me. When he pulls back, his expression has turned serious.
I need to tell you something.
My stomach plummets. Shit, I knew it was too good to be true.
It's not bad.
Then why are you making that face?
What face?
That scary, serious face, like you're about to tell me you have an STD. He opens the shower door, grabs a towel from the bar on the wall, drapes it around me, and starts drying my body.
Nope. Clean as a whistle.
Enjoying the attention, I pause for a moment of sobriety. Me too, in case you were wondering. I suppose we should have talked about that before all the,
Fucking?
That would be the word, yes. He bends down to dry off my legs as I rest my hands on his shoulders.
That, and your chances of getting pregnant with unprotected sex, too.
He straightens and gazes at me.
Also consent and safe words. I don't normally get so carried away.
I'm on the pill. Wait, back up a sec. Safe words?
In case I get too rough with you.
I almost laugh out loud. There's no such thing. I love how rough you are. He falls still, gazing at me with unblinking intensity, he says, slowly.
I could hurt you, Kayla. Accidentally, I mean. I don't want that to happen.
I like that he's so concerned with my well-being. I also like that he's taking the time to communicate that. What I don't like is the sudden and unwelcome thought that maybe he's hurt someone in the past. Accidentally or not, it seems as if there might be a story there. I ask tentatively, have you hurt someone before?
Yes,
he says instantly. Then he closes his eyes and swallows.
Not from sex, though. And it wasn't an accident.
I'm beginning to feel alarmed, but I keep my voice steady. Then how? He opens his eyes. A muscle in his jaw jumps. He inhales a slow breath.
My father used to beat my mother. Badly. He was a raging alcoholic and very violent. He put her in the hospital more than once. It went on for years. But I couldn't do anything about it when I was small. But when I grew up...
I realize I'm holding my breath. My heartbeat ticks up a few notches. I whisper, what? He looks away. That muscle in his jaw jumps again. When he speaks, his voice comes very low.
I'm afraid if I tell you, I'll never see you again.
That rocks me back on my heels for several reasons. One, because whatever he did, it was obviously bad. And by bad, I mean violent. And two, he's willing to tell me, but he's afraid of the consequences. He's scared that I'll freak out and run out the door. Which means that three, he's as into this unexpected situation between us as I am. I don't know if there's a word for this emotion I'm feeling. Maybe because it's a jumble of so many different things at once. But I do know for certain that whatever it is he did to his father, he did it to protect his mother. Then I remember what he said to me in the bar.
I didn't like my father.
Didn't. Past tense. Which suggests his father is no longer in the land of the living. And right then, I discover something about myself I never knew before. Hey. He glances back at me, his gaze wary and his jaw clenched. Staring straight into his eyes, I say, the past is dead. So whatever happened, whatever you've done, just know that I'll never ask you to explain yourself to me. I'll also never judge you for something you did to keep someone else from getting hurt, no matter how bad that something was. Life is messy, and we all have our reasons for doing what we do. I don't care about anything you did before we met. His lips part. He stares at me in disbelief, and something else I can't identify. It could be hope. But from now on, I do care what you do. If we keep seeing each other, I expect total honesty. Got it? Looking stunned, he nods. Good. Now dry yourself off, Fight Club, because I'm starving. I wind my arms around his shoulders, lift up onto my toes, and give him a soft kiss. Against his mouth, I whisper, your little bunny worked up an appetite from getting fucked so well by her big, bad lion. He grabs me and hugs me so hard I lose my breath. I feel his body tremble against mine, little shivers in his muscles that are in sync with his ragged breathing. For some strange reason, at that moment, the verse Dante sent in his last letter crosses my mind.
But already, my desire and my will were being turned like a wheel, all at one speed, by the love that moves the sun and the other stars.
The words echo in my head before disappearing when Aiden kisses me. 14. We eat breakfast at his place, then he follows me back home in his truck. When we get to the house, he insists on going inside and checking everything out before letting me in.
Better safe than sorry,
he says, leaning in the open driver's side window of my car.
Keys?
I hand them to him. I don't know if I locked it, though. I ran out in a pretty big hurry. He nods, then straightens and walks up the path to the front door. Watching him standing there trying the handle, I suffer a moment of cognitive dissonance. Only last month, it would have been Michael standing in his place. My charming, outgoing husband with his starched white dress shirts, polished black Oxfords, and slacks with the crisp leg seams. He was meticulous about his grooming, never leaving the house without a hair out of place or the faintest shadow of a beard on his jaw. And forget about tattoos. The sight of needles made Michael queasy. Every single year when he went to get his flu shot, he nearly passed out in the doctor's office. Aiden is almost his exact opposite. I doubt I could have picked someone more different than Michael if I tried. Aiden turns then and looks back at me, waiting anxiously in my car. He lifts his chin and disappears through the front door, leaving it open behind him. 10 minutes later, he appears in the doorway and gestures for me to come in. Apprehensive, I hurry up the path in my bare feet. At least it's not pouring down rain today, but I'm still shivering from cold. The sky overhead is the same dull gray of Michael's coffin. Anything? I ask when I reach Aiden.
All clear. Come inside.
I walk into the foyer, hugging my arms around myself. I'm wearing Aiden's big black sweatshirt, the arms rolled halfway up so they're even with my wrists. A pair of my shoes are under the console table. I shove my feet into them, not bothering to tie the laces. Aiden says,
Everything was locked. No signs of break-in. I checked upstairs, too.
I'm relieved, but also feel silly, seeing how I ran from the house as if I were being chased by demons. My overactive imagination is getting the best of me. Great. Thank you.
No problem.
Why are you smiling like that?
Oh, nothing. I just think you're really good at drawing, that's all.
I don't know what he means for a moment. When it hits me, I roll my eyes. You were in my office.
Had to check the windows.
You checked a few other things too, I guess. He reaches out and tugs on the sleeve of his sweatshirt, pulling me toward him. Then he wraps me in his arms and grins down at me.
I think that pet rabbit the little boy has is really cute.
I smile. Yeah, I bet you do.
So you're an artist?
Illustrator. Children's books mostly, though I do the occasional calendar and magazine piece. He leans down and gently presses his lips to mine.
You're crazy fucking talented, Kayla.
That compliment makes me feel as if gravity has ceased to exist. And the only reason I'm still tethered to the earth is that his arms are wrapped around my body. Thank you.
Aw, look at my bashful little bunny with her red cheeks.
Shut up before I kick you in the shin. Chuckling, he leans down and kisses me again.
Bashful and bitchy. My two favorite things.
Call me bitchy again and we'll see how far you can walk with a ruptured spleen. He tries to muffle the sound of his laughter by pressing his face to the side of my neck. I shove against his chest half-heartedly. Jerk.
You don't think I'm a jerk,
he says softly, then kisses me again. This time, more deeply. No, I admit to myself as his tongue delves into my mouth. No, sir, I do not. We kiss until both of us are breathing hard, and the little pulse of heat between my legs has grown into an ache. Then the guilt swamps me again, and I pull away, pressing my fingers to my lips. Aiden searches my face.
You okay?
Yeah. When I refuse to meet his eyes, he takes my chin in his hand and tilts my head up so I'm forced to look at him.
What is it?
My mouth has turned dry. I moisten my lips and swallow. I'm feeling a bit... I clear my throat. Uncomfortable. He seems surprised.
With me?
With doing this in my house. After a brief pause, he says...
Okay.
Then he steps back, releasing me. Oh, God, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hurt your feelings.
No, I get it.
He can't possibly get it. But I give him points for trying. It's just that it was very recent. My separation from my husband. I clear my throat again. And I keep expecting him to walk in the door at any minute. It's just weird for me. I'm sorry.
You can stop apologizing,
he says softly.
I said it's okay.
Cringing, I wring my hands together. I know, but I can tell it's not, and now I feel like a dick.
You're not a dick. I'd kiss you again, but I don't want to make it weirder for you than it already is. So here's the deal. I'm going to call my buddy Jake, who owns a security company. He's going to come out and set you up with an alarm. In the meantime, I've got a meeting I need to get to. But after, I'm going to get to work on that leak.
He nods toward the kitchen and the buckets on the floor.
I won't be able to start repairs until we get a break in the weather lasting more than a few days. But I'll put up a tarp on the roof to stop more water from coming in and remove any wet insulation from the attic so you don't get a mold problem. Okay?
Yes, okay, thank you. Oh, let me go and get my checkbook.
One more fucking word,
he cuts in,
and you earn yourself a spanking.
Startled, I stare at him. There's no smile on his face, no trace of humor. He's completely serious. I say tentatively, can I ask a question? He nods. Is it the checkbook I shouldn't be talking about? Or did you just want me to be quiet in general? He presses his lips together and folds his arms over his chest. Now I can tell he's trying to keep a straight face. He's also trying to be intimidating, and he's pretty much failing at both things. He says sternly,
what I meant is that I'm not taking your money.
But we agreed.
One more word.
He interrupts again, this time quite loudly. Mirroring his posture, I fold my arms over my chest and stare him down. I didn't have sex with you to get free roof repairs, Aiden.
No shit, Kayla. I'm still not taking your money.
Is this one of those macho man ego things? Do you really think I'm being emasculating by expecting to pay you for your time and expertise?
Yes, and yes.
I say flatly. That's nuts. He unfolds his arms, leans down into my face, and stares into my eyes.
Thanks for sharing your opinion on the subject. That's the last time you get to do it. Mention money to me again, and you know what you've got coming.
When I only stand there staring at him, he prompts,
acknowledge that you know what you've got coming.
Why?
It's called consent.
I say haughtily, I don't consent to a spanking over money.
Don't mention it again and you won't get one.
Remember when I told you I liked it when I wasn't being irritated? Ignoring that, he adds,
but if you do mention it again, I'm considering you warned and fully informed of the consequences, regardless of whether or not you claim to want it.
I make a screwy face. I think your logic is flawed.
How nice for you. Doesn't change a thing.
He turns on his heel and heads toward the front door. Where are you going? We're in the middle of a conversation. Over his shoulder, he says,
not anymore, we're not.
Get back here right now, or you're the one who'll get the damn spanking. Chuckling, he disappears out the front door. An hour later, Jake the security guy shows up. He's cut from the same cloth as Aiden, big, brawny, lumberjacky. He even has forearm tattoos and a beard, too, though his is a lighter shade of brown and has a few streaks of silver in it. I let him in and show him around. We end up in my office.
Piece of cake,
he says confidently.
Where do you want the smart hub?
I have no idea what that is.
It ties all your devices together and acts as the nerve center of your security system.
When I stare at him blankly, he continues,
we're going to connect your alarm, security cameras, and doorbell camera to a wireless hub that controls everything and interfaces with your smartphone so you can do it remotely.
Hub? Cameras? Remote control? I start to get nervous. That sounds expensive. Jake grins knowingly. The bright pink piece of gum he's chewing sticks out from between two molars.
Aiden said that if you mention money, I'm supposed to tell you that you know what happens.
My face flames. I say acidly, did he now?
Hey, don't shoot the messenger. Just doing my job here.
His tone is light, and there's a distant twinkle in his eye. I'm so going to kill Aiden the next time I see him. How about if we just set up a basic security thingy where I, like, punch in a code to arm the alarm? Jake makes a face at me as if I just insulted his mother. Seriously, I don't need cameras and all that other stuff. I just want an alarm to sound if someone breaks in.
But you should have cameras, so if someone does break in, you got it on video. It won't help the police very much if they can't identify the perp.
All this talk of perps and break-ins is starting to unsettle me. I say, maybe we should just forget the whole thing. Jake laughs.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
I'm taken aback by that. Why not?
Because Aiden says you're getting a security system, which means, like it or not, you're getting a security system.
I see.
Yeah.
He chews his gum and eyeballs me as if he wants to say something but doesn't think he should. What?
Nothing. Not my business.
Uh-huh. Except your face thinks it is. Spit it out, Jake. He debates with himself for a moment, then says,
you seem like a nice girl.
Yikes. That sounds bad. He holds up a hand.
Hear me out. And do me a favor and don't repeat this, okay?
I nod, anxiety blooming in my stomach.
I've been friends with Aiden since high school.
I cut in. If you're about to tell me he's a flagrant womanizer, I really don't want to hear it.
No, that's not what I was going to say.
Good. He cocks his head and frowns at me.
But if he was, you wouldn't want to know?
Like you said, it's not my business. He makes another face, and now I'm beginning to get exasperated. What now?
Just never met a woman who wouldn't want to know if she was getting involved with a skirt chaser is all.
Fine, is he a skirt chaser?
No.
I throw my arms in the air. You're killing me. Get to the point already.
Okay, look, I'll be straight with you. Aiden doesn't get close to people. Doesn't trust them.
His pause seems meaningful. I say, and?
He's had a rough time pretty much his whole life.
When he stops and snaps his gum, I think I know what he's getting at, and my cheeks grow hot again. Are you suggesting that I'm taking advantage of him? Because I specifically told him that I would pay for everything.
He likes you.
He interrupts, his voice low.
And Aiden doesn't like anybody.
He glances pointedly at my ring finger, then meets my eyes again.
I don't want to see him get hurt.
After a beat where my brain resets itself and my heart melts, I say softly, I like him too, and I'm not going to hurt him, Jake. I promise. He gives his gum a few doubtful grinds with his molars. I wonder what Aiden said to him about me, but I won't ask. Jake wouldn't tell me anyway. He's a loyal friend, there's the man code and all that. I'm lucky I even got this much out of him. Listen, I suggest a compromise. How about if you install something that isn't FBI surveillance, but also isn't bare bones? I won't be able to figure out anything too sophisticated, but I also don't want you to have to deal with Aiden's wrath if he doesn't approve, so let's shoot for somewhere between James Bond and Inspector Clouseau. Can we do that? He blows a bubble, pops it, then grins at me.
We can do that.
I stick out my hand and we shake on it, which is when I happen to glance over Jake's shoulder out my office window and notice someone standing in the yard down near the water's edge. Partially hidden by the trunk of a tree, the figure appears to be a man, though he's too far away to discern any facial features, and his eyes are obscured by the brim of the hat he's wearing. I have the distinct feeling that he's staring right at me. I catch a glint of white as the man bares his teeth, like an animal. A gust of wind whistles down the chimney. Goosebumps form on my arms. A shiver of fear runs through my body, chilling me to my bones.
I'll get my equipment from the truck and get to work,
says Jake. I glance in his direction as he walks out of the room. When I turn back to look out the window, the man by the tree is gone. 15. Feeling rattled, but also brave because Jake is in the house, and it's daytime, I decide to take a walk out to the water to investigate. Bainbridge Island is only a 35-minute ferry ride from Seattle, but it feels as if it's on a different planet. Much of it is covered in thick cedar woods or dedicated to nature preserves. But there's a quaint downtown area with cozy coffee shops, boutiques, and restaurants. Miles of trails that follow the rugged coastline and hilly interior make it a hiker's paradise. At 5 miles wide and 10 miles long with a population of only 25,000, the island is small, but is also a perfect spot for people who work in the city but don't want to live there. Michael and I settled here when he accepted the position as head of the PhD program at the University of Washington. That seems like a lifetime ago. I was a different woman then. A younger, happier woman who hadn't yet tasted any of life's bitter betrayals. How naive we are when we're young. How easily we trust that the sun will keep rising and setting, warming our days. And what a terrible blow it is to discover it isn't the sun that makes things bright, but the people who love us, so that when they're gone, everything is plunged into darkness. The property covers more than 2 acres. It's forested with mature evergreens and separated from the water's edge by a long stretch of lawn and a narrow, rocky beach. Bundled in a heavy winter coat with a knit hat pulled down over my ears, I cross the back porch and take the steps down to the lawn, then follow the walking path to the water. I avoid going anywhere near the dock or glancing in the direction of the boat tied to it. Michael christened her Eurydice. I always hated that name. I told him it was bad luck to name a boat after a nymph from Greek mythology who got trapped in the underworld. But Michael said he liked it. He found it romantic that Eurydice's husband, Orpheus, loved her so much, he followed her to hell to beg Hades for her release. When I pointed out that the story ends in tragedy, Michael just laughed at me.
It's only a story,
he said, and gave me a hug. As it turns out, I was right. Greek myth or not, doomed is doomed. Hindsight is a real bitch sometimes. When I arrive at the tree I saw the man standing under, I look closely at the ground. If I can find footsteps, I'll be able to tell where he ran off to. The ground is muddy around the trunk and bare of grass, so I should be able to spot something. But there's nothing there. No footprints. No disturbed earth. No sign of the person who stood and stared at me. My hair whipping around in the cold breeze, I turn and look back toward the house. From here, I can see directly into my office. The house sits slightly higher than the shoreline, but my office windows are large and the room is brightly lit. My drafting table faces the door, so when I sit there, the light and the window are at my back. Which means someone might have been standing here staring at me as I've worked for some time now, and I wouldn't have known. I look both ways down the shore. It's empty. My only company are the seagulls wheeling overhead and the dark waves lapping restlessly at the shoreline. Whoever he was, he's long gone. A glint from the ground near my shoes catches my eye. I lean down and pick a coin out of the mud. I wipe it off with my thumb and my breath catches. It's a buffalo nickel, minted between 1913 and 1938. The coins can be worth anywhere from 35 cents to $3 million, depending on the year and condition. This particular coin is stamped 1937. It's a D type, which shows the buffalo with only three legs instead of the usual four, and is worth exactly $2,560. I know that because Michael had it valued. It had been his grandfather's. He carried it everywhere with him. He swore it brought him luck. And I found it buried in the mud under a tree a stranger was spying on me from behind. My heart beating faster, I curl the coin in my fist and hurry back to the house, trying to convince myself that cold tingle down my spine is only the wind. A few hours later, Jake has finished installing the security system. Aiden has still not returned. Jake shows me how to use the system hub, which he mounted on the wall in my office next to the light switch inside the door. Then he installs the app on my iPhone so I can view the video feeds in real time, so in case someone rings the doorbell, I'll be able to see who's there without leaving the room. He also put a camera above the back door that captures a wide-angle view of the yard. How long has this been recording? I ask, wondering if it caught the man by the tree on camera.
About 20 minutes. It just went live. You've got enough memory in the system for a week's worth of imaging. Then it will record over itself and erase the old stuff so you're not paying for extra storage, which can get pricey.
So there's no recording of the yard at the time I saw the figure. I'm disappointed, but there's nothing to do about it. At least from now on, I'll be able to see if he pays me another visit, even when I'm not around. Jake says,
I've mounted code entry boxes at the front and back doors and inside the garage next to the laundry room door. If the system is accidentally tripped while the alarm is armed, you've got 30 seconds to disarm it with your code before it automatically notifies us. If you don't make it in time, tell your password to the operator who calls and they'll cancel the alarm.
His smile is rueful.
And try not to let that happen, because we charge $100 every time you accidentally set off the alarm.
Ouch.
Yeah, we're mercenaries.
I thought you owned the company.
I do.
So when you say we, you actually mean you. He laughs.
You sound like my wife.
I bet she's a highly intelligent woman. Grinning, he shakes his head.
Now you sound even more like her.
Great minds think alike. Out of curiosity, is there any way to get a notification on my phone if the cameras catch movement?
Sure. The app does that if you want me to set it up like that for you. Some folks don't like it because you'll get pinged every time a squirrel crosses the lawn or a car drives past the house. Can get annoying.
Is there a size setting, like so maybe it will miss a squirrel but capture a person?
No, but I can reduce the field to where the camera will still record everything, but it will only produce an event notice and ping your phone if someone, say, walks within 5 feet of the door.
This is all sounding a little more complicated than I'd hoped. I picture myself scrambling in panic for my phone every time it buzzes, only to find a rodent scampering across the front porch. Let's skip the notifications for now. I can always turn them on later, right?
Sure can. All I need from you now is for you to program your passcode into the hub. Then I'll show you how to use the code box. Then we're all finished.
He walks me through the process of inputting my code and demonstrates how the system works, which doesn't take long. Then he's packing up and shaking my hand. Walking him to the front door, I say, I know I'm not supposed to mention the M word, but you have to let me do something for you, Jake. This was really above and beyond.
Don't worry about it. If you keep what I said about Aiden between us, I'll consider us even.
I open the door and stand back to let him by. I will, and thank you, really. This means so much to me. He pauses to smile down at me.
Hope I see you again, Kayla. It'd be real nice if Aiden had a girl me and the wife could double date with. I know he feels like a third wheel sometimes.
Surprised to hear that, I say. Has it been a while since he's been serious with someone? He chuckles in a way that makes me think there's a long and involved story behind it.
You could say that. You take care now.
He ambles down the path to the driveway and climbs into his truck, waving as he revs the engine. I wave back, go inside, and lock the door, hoping my new alarm system is unnecessary, but not entirely believing it. By the time Aiden returns, it's dark.
Sorry I'm late,
he says when I open the door to his knock.
Meeting was a clusterfuck. Almost missed the last ferry.
He glances past me into the foyer.
Okay if I come in?
Of course. I swing the door wide and step back to let him through it. He walks into the foyer and inspects the security code box on the wall.
Jake do a good job for you?
Smiling, I close the door. Jake's awesome. He cuts his gaze to me.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like him.
You say that as if it's a surprise.
I shrug. I'm not a fan of people in general. I take it on a case-by-case basis. But Jake's a good egg.
He is.
He says softly, his eyes shining.
And same here about not being a fan of most people.
We should start a club. Introverts United, Seattle chapter. You can be the president.
We're not introverts. We're misanthropes. Big difference.
That reminds me. I've been meaning to tell you that I admire your vocabulary. Gazing down into my eyes and looking as if he'd like to grab me and gobble me up, he says gruffly.
Yeah? Anything else you admire, little rabbit?
Hearing that nickname reminds me of our sexy chase around his kitchen table. My whole body turns warm. I'll make you a list. We gaze at each other for a moment until he reaches out and sweeps his thumb over my burning cheek. He murmurs,
Good. You can recite it to me next time I'm inside you.
Somebody just picked me up and dropped me into a volcano. Searing heat envelops my skin. The breath I pull into my lungs is scorching. I wouldn't be surprised if I looked down to find all my clothes burnt to ashes and a pile at my feet. When I lick my lips, there's a moment where I'd swear he was about to lunge at me. But he controls himself, dropping his hand and turning businesslike.
I'm gonna get that tarp up now.
What? Now? It's dark outside.
So?
So, I don't want you falling off my roof and breaking your neck. He stares intently at me, his gaze sharpening.
Two things.
Oh no. Why do I get the feeling this is going to end badly for me? Brushing right past that, he says.
Number one, I don't fall off roofs, no matter how steep they are.
I cross my arms over my chest and resist rolling my eyes.
Number two,
he says more softly.
So what if I did break my neck?
I blanch. Aiden, that's not funny.
Nobody's laughing. Answer the question.
He's very serious now, gazing at me with burning intensity, an odd light behind his eyes. I don't know why, but my pulse goes haywire. I drop my arms to my sides and say, Please don't make me answer that.
Why not?
Because I don't think I'm ready for this conversation yet.
What conversation?
He steps closer. His intensity burns even brighter. We stand inches apart so I can feel his body heat. But he doesn't touch me. He merely gazes down at me with hooded eyes, waiting. Staring up into his dark eyes, I whisper, The conversation about how I feel about what's happening between us. He says instantly,
Yeah, we're gonna do that. Right now. Because I almost went fucking crazy thinking about you today. And if you're not into this, I'd rather know sooner than later.
I close my eyes and exhale a shaky breath. Did you forget our little chat in the shower so quickly?
Nope. Look at me.
I open my eyes. When he's got me good and trapped in the bonfire of his gaze, he says,
I know you're not comfortable getting close in your house, and I'm respecting that. Otherwise, I'd already have you naked. Understood?
Damn, he's intense. I swallow nervously and nod.
Good. Now talk.
I debate with myself in silence for a while, but Aiden doesn't push. He simply stands there, staring at me like I'm about to dispense some mystic secrets of the universe that have been lost to the human race since we were cave dwellers. Finally, I say, okay, but I'd like to ask that after I say what I'm going to say, that you don't make a big deal about it.
Define big deal.
I huff out a breath and shake my head. I think you know what I mean, Fight Club. A faint smile lifts his lips.
Yeah, I do. Just wanted to keep you talking.
Has anyone ever told you that you're a jerk?
Yeah. You. Twice. You didn't mean it either time. Get back on track and tell me what I need to hear.
I thrust my hands into my hair, close my eyes, and count to 10. The man is impossible.
You can stand there with your hands pressed against your head for as long as you want, but I'll still be standing right here waiting.
I believe that. I open my eyes, drop my arms to my sides, and stare up at him. Okay, Aiden, here's the deal. I like you, which I'm sure you already know, by the way. This is just your way of torturing me. I pause for a beat, but he doesn't deny it, so I continue. If you fell off my roof and broke your neck, it would seriously fuck me up. When he opens his mouth to interrupt me, I hold up a hand. I'm not finished. You'll get your turn. A low growl of displeasure rumbles through his chest, but I ignore it. I'm very attracted to you. Recalling how wantonly I rode his dick and how hard I came for him, the heat in my cheeks flares hotter. I think we've already established that beyond any doubt. I also feel safe with you, and for some bizarre reason, I instinctively trust you, which doesn't happen for me with anyone, but especially with men. It took 6 months of dating before I let my future husband see the inside of my apartment, so this thing we've got going on here, despite being brand new, is different. I don't know anything beyond that, and I hope you won't press me for any more because I tend to act like a cornered wolf when I get backed up against a wall, and believe me when I tell you that's not pretty. I fall silent. Fierce and unblinking, Aiden stares at me. I add sheepishly, I also, have never... role-played, or whatever it was we were doing when you were chasing me around your apartment, and Aiden practically shouts.
And?
I blurt. And I loved it. I want to do it again. Then I stand there, vibrating with embarrassment and wishing I could take it back. After an interminable period wherein I suffer in silent humiliation, Aiden says,
okay.
Disconcerted, I blink. What do you mean, okay? His smile comes on slow and hot.
Just what I said.
He points at the ceiling.
I'm going to go up on the roof and take care of that tarp now.
And the bastard turns on his heel and walks out my front door. He walks out. I holler after him. You know what? I was only joking. I made all that up. He can't hear me, but it makes me feel better anyway. 16. Dear Dante, I debated about whether or not to write you again, seeing as how I think you might be unstable. But you could also just be lonely. And if anyone knows about loneliness, it's me. The verse you sent was very poetic. I'm sorry, but I can't think of anything else to say about that right now. What I would like to say is that I hope you're not dangerous and about to be granted parole because... boy, would I look stupid when the police find my dead body and our correspondence. I can already see the headline. World's dumbest woman ignores all logic and writes letters to prisoner who eventually kills her. Okay, that's a lot, but you get my point. We've all heard about the prison pen pal romance gone wrong thing. Not that I'm suggesting there's anything romantic here, mind you. Just that I'll look really stupid if you break out of prison and kill me. Especially after writing that last line. Anyway... I most likely will shred this before it has a chance to be mailed. But on the off chance that I don't, please consider being truthful about what you did to be sentenced to prison. I suppose I could get my detective friend to tell me because people in his position probably have access to all kinds of sensitive information. but I'd rather hear it from you. That's it for now. I doubt you'll ever read this letter because I'm 90% sure I'll tear it up. But if I don't, well, take care, I guess. Sincerely, Kayla. 17. It's 3 o'clock in the morning when I finish the letter. I've been up since 1, pacing around my office, unable to sleep. My mind spins with a dizzying merry-go-round of questions. Who was the man on the water's edge? What does it mean that I found Michael's buffalo nickel in the exact spot he was standing? When did I decide it was reasonable to have a pen pal in prison? Where can I locate my brain? And finally, why did Aiden leave without saying goodbye? Because that's exactly what happened. After walking out in the middle of our conversation, he climbed a ladder up to the roof, draped a blue waterproof tarp over one section of it, pulled out some wet insulation from the attic, then roared off into the darkness in his big macho truck as if the woman he fucked to within an inch of her life the night before wasn't inside waiting for him. I really don't understand men. Dealing with men is like dealing with a hostile alien species who crash-landed on the planet and decided our language and customs are too silly to be bothered with, and henceforth we should be treated with mild disdain and or as objects of occasional sexual release before being ignored as inferior beings again. I do feel better having the alarm, however, so that's one positive thing. The little green light on the hub glows cheerfully at me from the wall by the door, reminding me that if nothing else, I can have the cops here in under 10 minutes if I forget to disable the alarm. Or if someone breaks in to try to murder me, but I'm not thinking about that. I fold the letter to Dante into thirds and slip it in an envelope. I place it in the top drawer of my desk, thinking I'll decide if I want to mail it or not in the morning. Then I drop heavily into the desk chair and absentmindedly rub the buffalo nickel between two fingers as I stare at the closed drapes, deep in thought. Until, directly above my head in the master bedroom, a floorboard creaks. I freeze, staring up at the ceiling. When nothing else happens after several excruciating seconds, I glance nervously at the security hub on the wall. The green light glows reassuringly back at me. I relax for 2 seconds until another floorboard creaks overhead, then another, and I break out in a cold sweat. It's the wind, I whisper, gripping the arms of my chair and hyperventilating. It's only the wind. My brain decides to wake up from its recent coma to remind me that my ears can't hear a breath of wind stirring outside the windows. I counter with the indisputable fact that no one could possibly be in the house as I locked all the doors and armed the security system before I went to bed. My brain, the asshole, suggests with no regard to my emotional well-being that perhaps whomever is making that noise upstairs was already in the house before then. Fuck. Keep it together, Kayla, I whisper as my hands begin to shake. Nobody is in the house except you. When the silence above my head continues for the next 5 minutes, I decide I'm not scared anymore. I'm mad at myself. Because if I'd heard another creak, I have no doubt I'd have leapt from the chair and run screaming out the door only to make another surprise appearance at Aiden's apartment, making a complete fool of myself once again. Armed with my new anger, I take a breath and go to the door. I'm fine when I step outside the office and look around. I'm fine as I creep up the stairs and peer into the master bedroom, which is exactly as I left it. No floorboard creaking intruders in sight. I'm also fine as I check all the upstairs rooms, flipping lights on and feeling more and more ridiculous with every passing second when I find nothing out of place. It isn't until I go back downstairs, step into the kitchen, and turn on the overhead lights that I go from fine to freaking the fuck out. Every drawer is pulled all the way out. Every cupboard door stands wide open. I clap my hands over my mouth to stifle my terrified scream. I stand frozen, listening to my pulse roar in my ears. Adrenaline burns through my veins, urging me to run, but I'm rooted to the floor in fright. I can't move a muscle. The eerie sense that I'm being watched slowly creeps over me. I almost sob in terror, but I manage to hold it together and turn to see if someone is behind me. But there's no one there. I'm alone. Just me, my paranoia, and the drawers and cupboards, which all apparently have overgreased rails and hinges, because there's no other explanation for this. Because the kitchen just doesn't decide to fling things open on its own. Except maybe it does, because out of nowhere, a jar of honey flies off a shelf and smashes to pieces in the middle of the kitchen floor. My nerves are no match for it. I jump, scream, and spin around, bolting toward my office. I plow through the door, slam it behind me, lock it, and dive behind the sofa, wedging myself between it and the wall. I lie there, curled in a terrified, shaking ball until the sun rises 4 hours later. In the morning, I feel like a gigantic idiot. Funny how daylight can chase away even the scariest of monsters. Once the sun came up, I finally remembered to view the camera feed on my phone. I must have hit play and rewind 100 times, but there was zero evidence of anyone coming anywhere near the house except when Jake drove off in the afternoon, and when Aiden arrived and left later. And according to my trusty security hub, the perimeter of the house was never breached. Nobody climbed through a window. Nobody kicked in a door. I was here alone all night. As for the open cabinets and drawers, I remind myself there's the distinct possibility I did that and don't remember. If I added up all the small lapses in my memory of late, I could make a convincing case for early onset dementia. Why on earth I might have felt the need to leave my own kitchen in such a state is a mystery, but there also could have been a small earthquake I missed that would account for it, right? That's plausible. More plausible than the other things I'm not allowing myself to consider. Regarding the flying jar of honey, well, I was overstimulated. It probably toppled off the shelf, not flew, and in my agitated state, I conflated it with my fright over the creaking and the stupid open cupboards to be more than it was. I know full well I'm rationalizing, but that's what one does when one is faced with the possibility that their grip on reality is in question. I consider going back to the grief group, but toss that idea as quickly as it comes. If I want to be depressed, I'm doing just fine with that on my own. Then I consider calling Eddie the handyman to get the number of his shrink, but after careful deliberation, I decide that if Eddie is the end product of psychoanalysis, I might be better off steering clear of it. If I'm going to spend hundreds a week unloading my various neuroses on a therapist, I'd like to come out the other side without the need to smoke what smelled like an entire crop of marijuana in order to get through my day. I psych myself up to leave the office and face the kitchen, but when I get there, I feel curiously let down. In daylight, the open drawers and cabinets seem utterly benign. I expected to feel nervous, at least, but the only thing I feel is slight irritation. It's totally anticlimactic. I shut the cupboards and close the doors, then clean the sticky mess of honey and broken glass off the floor. Then I dump the plastic buckets of rainwater down the sink. Thanks to Aiden's tarp, the ceiling has stopped leaking. The water stains look eerily like two big eyes staring down at me accusingly. Gazing up at them, I mutter, "Don't give me that look. You would have been scared too." I debate whether or not I should call Aiden, but decide against it. I don't know what his strange performance was all about yesterday, but I do know that I'm not going to reward him for running off after insisting I show him all my cards. Isn't that just typical, though? The minute you start talking about feelings, men suddenly go deaf and mute. It's like their superpower. Thinking about it leaves me depressed. I shower and dress and work until it's late enough in the afternoon that I won't feel like a complete degenerate for opening a bottle of wine. After 2 glasses, I decide to go back to work. I'm able to finish the boy feeding the talking rabbit piece I've been working on for far too long and move to the next one in the story. I need to complete 27 illustrations for this book, and I've only got 6 weeks left to do it, so I need to hustle if I'm going to make the publisher's deadline. Except my fingers decide they'd rather draw something else. The tree takes shape first. It's a tall evergreen with a crooked tip and scraggly lower branches. Then the rocky strip of shore emerges. A dark sky filled with ominous clouds is next, followed by soaring seabirds and wind-swept water. The figure appears last. Tall and gaunt, the man peers out from behind the trunk of the tree, his eyes hidden by the brim of his hat, his teeth bared in an ugly grimace. A hostile grimace. A truly frightening one. My heart beating faster, I set down the pen, sit back in the chair, and stare at the drawing. Something about this man is familiar. I can't decide what it is, but I feel as if I've seen him before. But where? When the doorbell rings, I jump. I'm on my feet before I remember to look at the video in the app. When I grab my cell phone off the desk and navigate to the live feed, however, the front porch is empty. Aggravated, I say loudly, "Cut it out, house!" As if in response, the desk lamp flickers. I freeze and stare at it in trepidation. My pulse and blood pressure rise along with my anxiety. The moment stretches out until I feel as if my nerves might snap from the strain. I don't know what exactly I'm waiting for, but whatever it is, I'm already scared. Then a text arrives with its cheery jingle, and I jerk so hard I drop the phone. I stand with my fingers pressed to my temples for a moment, trying to catch my breath, Before I bend to retrieve the phone from the carpet, my hands shake so badly I'm embarrassed for myself. But when I see the message, I exhale in relief.
You didn't call me. Now would be a good time to fix that.
Oh, Aiden, I sigh, shaking my head. You're going to be a handful, aren't you? I dial his number and try to pretend I don't already have it memorized. He picks up after one ring.
Hello, beautiful bunny,
he says in a throaty voice. Hello yourself. My tone must have been less than enthusiastic because after a beat he says,
You're mad at me.
Mad is too strong a word. It's more like annoyed.
What did I do to earn the ire of such a sweet little rabbit?
Irked at the humor in his tone, I say tartly, Maybe you need a time out to think about it.
And maybe you need a spanking to remind you who you're talking to.
That threat would hold a lot more weight if you weren't laughing at me.
I'm not laughing. I've been obsessing about your perfect little ass all day. How pink it got when I spanked it. How you moaned.
He pauses.
I wonder how loud you'll moan when I fuck it.
Ah, yes. Here comes that flush of heat spreading upward from my neck to settle in my cheeks as it does every time the man opens his mouth and says something to me. I clear my throat of the frogs stuck in it. Are you asking in a professional capacity as my roofer? Because if so, I think I might need to lodge a complaint.
With who? I own the company.
His voice drops.
There's no professional capacity here, baby. Don't get it wrong. This is all personal.
I'm sweating. Why am I sweating? Oh, Christ, I'm roasting alive. Pulling at the collar of my shirt, I say, If it's so personal, why did you leave without saying goodbye yesterday?
Come over here and I'll tell you.
Stalling for time, I ask, Where's here? He says softly.
You know where. And don't bother wearing panties. They'll only get torn to shreds.
He disconnects, leaving me even more disoriented and shaky than I was before he called. I hesitate, undecided if I should go to his apartment. I know it's not wise. I've had 2 glasses of wine, I have work that needs to be done, and he's a slippery slope I'm sliding down at lightning speed. A beautiful distraction from the wreckage of my life. The dangerous thing about distractions, though, is how quickly they can grow addicting. And haven't you been through enough already? I whisper, staring at the framed picture on the wall of Michael and me on our wedding day. It was a glorious afternoon in May. The sky was cloudless for once, and the scent of honeysuckle perfumed the air. Standing beside me in a tux on the steps of the church, Michael gazes down at me. He's smiling widely, handsome even in profile, one arm wrapped around my waist. Wearing a frothy, sleeveless gown of silk and lace and holding a bouquet of pure white calla lilies, I stand next to him, looking directly into the camera. Unlike Michael, I'm not smiling. I recall how nervous I was that day, how my stomach was twisted into knots, how hard Michael squeezed my hands as we recited our vows. Later, he said I was so pale and trembling he thought I might pass out right there at the altar. I never told him that I threw up before I walked down the aisle. That's not something you want your spouse to remember. It's not something you want to remember yourself either. There's no place for such things on what's supposed to be the best day of your life. And so I locked it away. So effectively, that particular memory hasn't surfaced since. Until now. I noticed something in the photo I've never noticed before. A few inches below my right shoulder, there's a smudge on my biceps. Moving closer to the picture, I squint to make it out. Lifting my hand, I trace a finger over the glass where the smudge is, but it doesn't rub off because it's not a smudge. It's a bruise, a small, dark bruise in the shape of a thumb. I fall still. Something dark gathers into storm inside me. A noise like 1,000 wing beats echoes in my ears. Beneath it, there's a faint, muffled sound that could be screaming, but it sounds as if it's coming from very far away or underwater. All the tiny hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. I feel as if an important understanding hovers just out of my reach, a key to a lock on a door that I didn't know until this moment even existed. What is it? What am I missing? Then the desk lamp flickers again, breaking the spell. Shaking my head to clear it, I send Aiden a text with trembling hands. be right over. 18. Before I can even knock, Aiden yanks open the door. He pulls me inside, kicks the door shut, takes me into his arms and kisses me passionately. I kiss him back, desperate for him to make me forget everything except the way it feels when his mouth is on mine. Without a word, he pulls my t-shirt up and over my head. He flings it to the floor and kisses me again. He's not wearing a shirt, so my breasts are pressed against his bare chest. His skin is smooth and hot, and he feels wonderful. I thought you were supposed to be telling me why you left without saying goodbye yesterday, I tease. Instead of answering, he picks me up and carries me into his bedroom. I marvel that he can do that with such ease because I'm nowhere near what could be described as petite. But then he's lowering us to the mattress and pressing the long, hard length of his body against mine, and I forget about his strength because I'm too busy luxuriating in how good he feels on top of me. I love how much you weigh, I say breathlessly, squirming underneath him. You're so solid. I almost add, it makes me feel safe, but bite my tongue in time. Now isn't the time to have a chat about my recent meltdown after what happened in the kitchen. Kissing my neck, he says.
Is that number one on that list you were going to make about all the things you like about me?
It's not even in the top 10. Please keep doing that. I love how your beard feels on my skin. Into my ear, he says gruffly.
That's twice you've said the word love, little rabbit.
When I don't respond, he raises his head and gazes at me with one brow arched. Shivering, I whisper. Okay. He chuckles. Hey, if you can get away with using that word to cover entire conversations, so can I.
Oh, you think the same rules apply to bunnies as to big bad wolves?
His tone is dark and hot, and there's a thrilling glint of danger in his eyes, knowing exactly what I'm doing. I blink up at him innocently. I thought bunnies made the rules that the wolves had to follow.
No, you didn't. Liar.
He flips me over, yanks my jeans down my hips, and spanks me. When it's over, and I'm lying there panting and trembling with need, he says softly,
Was that too hard?
No.
Think about it for more than half a second before you answer.
Craning my neck, I look at him over my shoulder and meet his burning gaze. I know you're worried you'll hurt me. Thank you for that. But I like it rough. Gazing down at me with those dark eyes alight, he says,
We need to have a safe word just in case.
What exactly is a safe word?
It's a word that makes everything stop when you say it.
How about cheesy? He arches his brows, waiting for an explanation. Because it is cheesy.
No, it's necessary. We need to communicate clearly about these things.
I frown at him. Since when are you Mr. Conversation? Half the time I barely get a grunt out of you. Kneeling over me and stroking his palm over one of my burning ass cheeks, he smiles.
That's funny.
In what way exactly?
I talk to you more in one day than I talk to anyone else in a week.
I make a face at him. Really? How are you still in business? You know sign language or something? He bends down and bites my ass. When I yelp in surprise, he bites the other cheek, laughing against my skin.
Such a mouthy little rabbit,
he whispers, rubbing his beard over my stinging behind. Then he slides a hand between my legs and his voice gains an edge.
And so ready for me.
I close my eyes and curl my fingers in the sheets, lying still as he glides his fingers through my wetness. He takes his time, lazily stroking my clit until I'm panting. Aiden?
Yes, baby.
I need more.
And you'll get it when I'm ready to give it to you.
I turn my face to the sheets and wriggle my bottom, attempting to hurry him along.